Hello, and welcome back to the Women Offshore podcast. I am Jace Curry, Director of Community Outreach. And today I have with me Erica DeRamo, founder of Two Peers Consulting and also Director of Development for Women Offshore. So we are here on the podcast today talking about an uncomfortable topic. If you have experienced sexual harassment or sexual assault, you may find this episode triggering. And if you do so, I encourage you to turn it off. Maybe give it a listen down the line if you feel called and are ready, or skip it completely. So just wanted to put that out there for anyone who is listening. Please, please, please take care of yourself during this time, because that's exactly what this episode is about. It's about setting your own personal boundaries after situations that you're hearing about in the industry have happened. Maybe it's something that you've experienced as well, because they can be really triggering. And I just invite you to check in with yourself during this time. And we're going to give you some kind of tools and tricks to help you get through if you're experiencing a lot of discomfort, if you're just really struggling right now. So Erica, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks, Jace. I'm excited to talk about this with you in particular, actually, because I feel like this is an area that you and I have some overlapping kind of understanding and also some differing understanding too. So I'm looking forward to hearing some of your insights as well as we go.
Yeah, no, I'm thankful to you for coming on the show. These are certainly not easy conversations to have. And I know you and I were talking about this a bit offline beforehand. Well, actually, let's go into when these things happen. There's a lot of different emotions that can come up. And especially having worked in the industry where you're really encouraged to not really show emotion and you're encouraged to just kind of like be strong and muscle through a lot of this stuff, feeling this can be super uncomfortable. And I think that's something that a lot of people aren't prepared for, is like just the range of things that can come up.
Yeah, it's a good point. And I think we should clarify when we say like when this stuff happens or when these things come up. I guess when we say that, I'm specifically thinking about when incidents that we may have experienced either firsthand or even secondhand through loved ones or colleagues or friends, incidents that involve trauma. And that trauma might look like sexual assault or sexual harassment. That trauma can take a lot of different forms, right? So yeah, it doesn't always look like what we might typically be talking about. And so when we say when these things come up, we kind of just mean anything that may have been experienced as trauma by you being revisited either in the media or by, you know, friends discussing it, if it's something that's just in the industry right now, current events, and that you may be exposed to without necessarily being prepared or even consenting to having the conversation or being exposed to the discussion. So when we say when these things happen, that's kind of, I think, what we're talking about here.
Yes. And thank you for the clarification. Like, certain things are super hard to talk about, right? And sometimes I almost feel like I don't have words for them. And especially trying to be very cognizant and aware that like these are certainly things that have impacted our community, our friends, and even ourselves, right?
Yeah. So you mentioned kind of the emotions that could come up. And this is something that I mentioned to you. Just, I think I mentioned it even in outside of this exact discussion, like outside of this context, just that I was sort of surprised. Right now, there's a lot of discussion in the industry about sexual assault and sexual harassment, because we've had some high profile cases come about and get a lot of attention and a lot of discussion.
Well-deserved attention and discussion. Yeah.
And it's hopefully
long overdue.
Yeah, right. It's hopefully going to result in change. But witnessing my own emotions was kind of surprising to me, to be honest, because it's sort of run the whole gamut, right? It's been a mixture of like relief that we're finally having this discussion. It's been intense sadness and grief, even in seeing that the same things are still happening, that were happening 20 years ago when I entered the industry. And then, honestly, a real big dose of anger, right? Like, I've had to acknowledge the anger that I felt that we're still having these conversations, and that some of the voices that are coming through, while I'm grateful that the voices are coming through, they have been there in the industry for a long time. So there's a little bit of like resentment, if I'm honest with myself, about like, well, where were these people when I kind of was struggling, or when I reported, or like, where was all of this uprising when my friends reported incidents or when they went through similar things? And so I think it's just really important to acknowledge those emotions and not try to squash them and say like, that's not the appropriate emotion for me to be feeling right now. I shouldn't be feeling anger. That's not productive. You know, like, we become very skilled, I think, sometimes at silencing our inner emotions, especially when we're working in an industry that discourages us from kind of being vulnerable, showing emotion, being considered, you know, like, it opens us up to being considered crazy or irrational or all these different kind of tropes that we use, particularly against women who emote. So yeah, I would invite anyone who's feeling a mixture of emotions that may be surprising to just kind of sit with them for a little bit, examine where they're coming from, and show yourself some self-compassion, because I think there's no right way to feel.
Yeah. Okay. You hit the nail on the head. And, you know, a lot of what I've seen in my work outside the industry is people who are experiencing byproducts of not feeling things. So whether that looks like, you know, addiction or struggles with food or whatever, all that comes from like trying to numb out and dissociate from all the stuff that's going on. And I know this to be true. And so, like, no matter what's going on for you, as uncomfortable as it may be, I certainly encourage you to feel through it as much as you feel that you can, to certainly reach out to mental health professionals if you feel called to, because it's a lot, right? And like you said, it's a lot, and you may not be prepared to feel all these things. Like, some really surprising things came up for me this last week and a half. Like, I found myself very, you know, at first I was like, oh, cool, another day in the maritime industry. And that was my initial response, as horrible as that is. And, but I think it's
like that jaded, just like, right, here we are again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's happened so much, largely, you know, sexual assault and sexual harassment cases have largely been silent over the years. They very rarely make it to the media, social media, any of these things. It's kind of the things that we all talk about behind the scenes, like meeting another woman in the industry at our conferences, etc. But it hasn't gained the attention until recently. And so I also found myself, if I'm just being really honest, surprised at everything that came up for me. And it's such an important point to like give yourself the grace and the time when you can, right? Like, to feel through this, especially if you're on the ship right now, especially if you're on tower right now, like, you might be experiencing some difficulty with that. And so it might not be the right time for you, and that's totally okay. And like, if it's time when you get home, definitely give yourself the space for that.
You know, it's fascinating, because I feel like perhaps because I exited the industry, the energy industry, so my time offshore was usually on ships that didn't move a lot, but were intended to move a lot. I exited the industry at the end of 2020 to fully focus on my consulting business. And so I feel, in a way, I'm like processing this stuff more fully now that it's being brought to me, and I don't need to like hyper police my emotions because I'm in a safer environment. I'm like in a psychologically safe environment with supportive colleagues, supportive family, supportive network. And that wasn't always available to me when I was sort of like in it.
Yeah.
And so I had to be like so much just tougher. I mean, I guess tougher, but that's not even the right word, right? It's like, I had to be so much more numb as a survival tactic, I think. And now it's almost like, even though I might be decades away from what was trauma, I'm like able to more fully feel it, which is surprising because I would have thought it would be less intense now, right? Like time would have given me less intensity. But I just think like these things come in waves and the processing comes in waves. And so again, there's like no right or wrong emotion necessarily. And it's not like an indication that you haven't healed or that you haven't healed properly or that you're like irrational or you're losing it or whatever, right? Like sometimes we just, our bodies and our minds will protect us in ways that mean that sometimes we process the emotion later when we're in an environment where we can do it.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. And I think that's an important point too. Like you might feel fine this week, you might feel fine next month. And then 3 months down the line, it might be like, oh my gosh. And the weight of things kind of come crashing down. And like, all of that is okay. And in the range of normal, and like our bodies hold on to these experiences until they're processed. Right. So making sure that, like you said, you're in a psychologically safe environment to do so is key. It doesn't feel good to walk out on tower and bust out into tears because you have a lot going on and you don't want to talk about it with your coworkers. Like, so, you know, there's no shame in doing what you need to do in this moment to get through it.
Even if it's in the locker room, even if it's in the change room, it's fine.
Yeah.
And a lot of tears cried in the change rooms. Yeah, I will say something you mentioned kind of brought up for me. I saw a tweet and I wish I could like give it proper attribution right now, but it was something along the lines of like, some people think that if they don't go to therapy, that they get to like avoid dealing with their stuff. But essentially, you just end up putting it on everyone around you. So yeah, you mentioned therapy, like just in passing. And I would say that I'm a big proponent. I will just take this opportunity to say I'm a big, big proponent because it's true. Like, it's not like it doesn't get dealt with. It just comes out in different ways. Perhaps we end up putting that stuff on our loved ones or on our colleagues or on our friends or whatever, but like, it's there and it's coming out.
100%. Yeah. And actually, you know, that kind of brings me to something else that we talked about earlier today. Like if someone is finding themselves really triggered and they need support, but they're not ready to verbally process this with someone. So maybe they want to lean on loved ones for support, but they don't want to put anything into words or can't put it into words, right? Because that's a common thing that happens. Can you give some ways that we could address that?
I think being honest with the people around us in terms of what's going on, even when we can't share details, can be really, really helpful. So I know for me, there have been certain people in my life right now that are kind of depending on me to kind of follow through on stuff. And I've had to have a few conversations that don't, you know, perhaps I'm not really wanting to get into it. I'm not really wanting to disclose a lot of details, but just to let them know that I'm not operating at 100% right now. I need a little bit more bandwidth. I need a little bit more capacity and I need neither support or understanding. Perhaps I just need to go for a walk, right? Like I need to get out of my head. I need to get out there. Relying on our loved ones for that support doesn't mean that we need to give them all the details if that's not something that we want to discuss. And then that extends even into, honestly, even into the workplace, even into educational settings. It's just an example that stands out in my head. When the Christine Blasey Ford testimony was coming out, I listened to it and was shocked by how it like actually incurred flashbacks for me in a way that was like just out of left field, blindsided me. And I had to walk into an exam that day. Mm. And I just pulled the professor, you know, and doing my MBA at the time, and I just pulled the professor aside and just let them know, like, I am not in a good headspace because of some stuff that's going on. And I can't really talk about it or disclose, but it's affecting my mental health and like my capabilities right now. And he was shockingly supportive. And that's not always going to be the case, right? Yeah. It's not always going to be the case, but all we can do is be a bit vulnerable when we feel we have that opportunity and share what we can and maybe try to reduce some of the stigma. Besides that, though, some of the other avenues that I found when I'm not ready to talk about something, but I need a bit of an outlet, have been journaling about stuff that's not even related, just like getting some words down on paper for me.
That's so interesting.
And things like coloring books, ironically, have been a way for me to just sort of like take some of the static noise out of my own thought process and just get me out of my head a little bit, get me out of my head and like somatically kind of into my body a bit more, just into my hands, into my like surroundings. So
yeah. And like you said, I think the honesty and the little bit of vulnerability goes a long way. It certainly, you don't need a lot of details, as little as much as you're comfortable sharing, especially in professional and educational settings. Like, certainly don't need to overshare, but having the ability to say like, hey, some things are coming up for me right now, sharing that with loved ones, like, hey, you know, this is coming up for me right now. And then also, as difficult as it is, like asking for the support that you need, because people are not mind readers. And especially if you're having difficulty sharing details or don't want to share details, you know, people want to help for the most part. Your loved ones are your loved ones, and they want to help you. But sometimes that can look like asking for what we need. So like, hey, I'm not up for making dinner tonight. Can you handle that? Or can you order us takeout? Or can I just sit here with you and like cry for a little bit? And
yeah,
that goes a long way as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think too, with the oversharing fear, I would say like, if you don't want to share details, don't ever feel like you have to.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I would invite people who feel like they can be more transparent or vulnerable and they want to be, to not own other people's discomfort on that. You know, like mm-hmm. if you have the opportunity and you have the mental health capacity and you have the safety net or support or even privilege to be able to share some of what you've experienced, there's no need to carry shame about that. So, you know, I have selectively kind of said, this is what's going on and this is why. And I'm telling you outright right now, because I'm trying to destigmatize sexual assault and rape. And yeah. So that's why I'm being candid about this. Like, I don't need you to say anything and I don't need you to do anything, but I'm being honest and candid and I'm trying to do my part here.
Yeah. So, yeah. One thing that I'll do too is like, especially with my friends and whatnot, I will say to them like, hey, I'm going through something right now. Do you have the bandwidth to process this with me? And asking that question kind of opens up the door, because sometimes people genuinely don't. Like, they're going through their own stuff, whatever. They're having a bad day. They have a meeting in 10 minutes, whatever that looks like for them. But in asking that question, it can certainly help ease that fear, like you said, of oversharing and not letting people, like, they might totally surprise you in how they respond.
Yeah. I guess as somebody whose emotional bandwidth is kind of maxed out right now, I think that that's something I would really appreciate, is someone kind of checking with me before they unload, because we're all in slightly precarious positions right now, right? We need to take care of each other.
Yeah. And that brings me to my next question. So how do we balance being allies for people who are in these situations right now, who are triggered by these situations right now, while still managing our own mental health?
Yeah, it's another great question. And again, this is like the coach in me, you know, that will resist giving advice. I can share what I have found works for me, and for each person, it'll be different. I certainly think that keeping the framework in mind that I need to aim for sustainability in my efforts like really just centering that this is not a sprint. This is going to be enduring. And that by burning myself out, I fundamentally cannot support people. I cannot be a good ally if I am burnt out, or if I end up becoming so like frazzled that I'm no longer effective in my efforts, right? So neither of those would be a good outcome. And so making sure that I'm tuning in to some of the indicators that burnout is approaching before it's kind of fully there is important. Because I feel like we usually realize that we're burnt out after we've already kind of burned the last of the fuel.
Yeah, it can be really easy to be like, oh no, I can just do this one thing. It's so tiny. I can certainly do that. And then at the end of the day, I sit down and like be like, oh my gosh, I literally have nothing left. I know even last night I was sitting on the couch and I was like, okay, I need to go get in the shower and go to bed. And like, I still sat there for about 15 more minutes because the act of like getting up, getting in the shower and going to bed just seemed like a lot. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I almost spent the night on the couch last night after that call. I agree. The stairwell to the upstairs bedroom was a lot to handle. But yeah, like tuning into what those indicators are that burnout's approaching. For me, an indicator is that, you know, I don't actually cry very often, but I've certainly found lately that I've sort of been like on the verge of tears a lot. That's a good indicator that I am approaching burnout. You know, that's like a prime litmus test for me. And the risk there is that if I do burn out and then, you know, people need my help and I'm kind of incapacitated at that point because I'm either like regurgitating gobbledygook and I'm either useless or I'm just so shut down that I'm not engaging. Right. So,
yeah. Can you talk about enforcing boundaries that maybe you or your clients have found helpful when they're in similar situations?
Yeah, I think boundaries can look so different. Boundaries can be just contained in and of ourselves, you know, like setting our own boundaries about what we will do, what we won't do. For me, I deleted social media off my phone recently, because I found that I was using that as sort of an escape mechanism, kind of a numbing effect. And it wasn't numbing in like a positive way. It wasn't like an analgesic in any way. It just ended up making me feel more down than when I started looking at it. So if it were rejuvenating, I would say there's nothing wrong with it. But if at the end of whatever that activity is that you find yourself doing, you feel worse off, then that might be an area that you can set a boundary, right? And you can do that yourself. And there's a lot of agency in that, in setting those internal boundaries. And then there's interpersonal boundaries that we usually mean when we talk about setting boundaries. And that's like all about communication, right? It's kind of revisiting what we mentioned when we need help. And it's not that different. Speaking our needs to the people around us, whether that's a need for help, a need for space, that is really valuable. And I think what ends up happening, at least for me, is if I don't assert those boundaries proactively, then I end up getting resentful. Right. And it comes 100%. Through.
Yeah.
It comes through, right? It comes through at our loved ones or at our friends if we're kind of exerting ourselves to the point where we don't want to be anymore. We don't have anything left to give, but we're still sticking with it out of some sort of like perceived sense of loyalty or, I don't know, dedication. And so that just engenders resentment. And if you're starting to sense any sort of resentment, a boundary would be a much healthier way to engage there, especially if you communicate like where that boundary is coming from and why it's being asserted. And if you sense like fear with setting a boundary, whether the boundary is like, I can't meet after insert time, I'm not going to check emails on a weekend, I'm not available via text. These are healthy boundaries set that society is kind of like, it's not used to now because we're constantly accessible. We're expected to be constantly accessible, right?
Casually eroding on the daily. Yeah.
Yeah. But they're perfectly fine boundaries to set. And oftentimes if we set that boundary and it's met with like resistance or, you know, hurt feelings or people are offended by it, that's oftentimes just a representation of that person feeling like they can't set that boundary, right? That they don't feel empowered to set that boundary, and or they have chosen not to set that boundary. And so by you doing so, kind of flies in the face of that assumption. So I would invite people not to internalize that, you know, let people deal with their own discomfort when it comes to you setting your boundary.
Yeah. And I'll also
easier
say
said than done.
Yeah. Is that not the truth? Yeah. I'll also say too, like, setting your personal boundaries for how you are going to take care of yourself during these times is so important. So like for me, that looks like some sort of somatic work every day. And so for those of you who don't know, when we reference this, it's really like getting into the body and helping your body renegotiate events on the body-based level, because that's where emotions are processed. So it looks like some sort of somatic work every day. Some days it's just a walk. Some days it's an hour of breath work. Some days it's like literally just putting my feet on the ground and like noticing how that feels. And so, but that's a boundary for me, is that I do one of these practices every single day because I know that it's going to help so much. And I know that, like, okay, I need to eat. I need to eat relatively healthy foods. Yeah, there might be a cupcake in there, but like right now I also really need to nourish my body. And so putting these personal boundaries into play as well is super, super important, because it can just be so easy to sit there and be burnt out and not take a shower, even though, you know, it'll make you feel so much better once you get out of there.
The elusive shower. Yeah. I know. So a couple that I've set recently, I won't take my phone in the bedroom with me. That's one for me.
That's a good one.
Yeah. Because I don't want the last thing that I do at night to be checking my phone, checking my email, checking my calendar, right? I can do that well before I like get into my bed. And then I don't want the first thing I do in the morning to be checking my phone, seeing what texts I have.
Yeah, no, that's a really, really good one. Also, like another point I just wanted to touch on, and this is kind of my closing thoughts here, unless you have anything else, is that we're giving you a lot of information and a lot of tools, and some of this might be new to you. Some of it might be old hat, and that's okay. But know that, like, if we just gave you, I don't know, 25 things to do, and you can only do one, and you can only do it halfway, that's 100% okay right now. Like, do your best. Hold like what is going to be in your highest and best good right now, but don't feel like this is a to-do list and you have to do all these things right now, because that'll burn you out real quick and you're going to be real resentful.
I know.
So,
ironically, a lot of what we're talking about is doing less, right? And that's okay if you're not able right now to do less. A lot of this is about setting intentions, and just, it's a journey, and being just self-compassionate and giving yourself forgiveness. If you do, you know, cross your own boundaries, like if you do burn yourself out, if you can't be the best ally because you've burned yourself out, it's okay, right? This is, we just keep trying. And we just keep moving in our imperfect selves, and it's fine.
Yeah. Erica, thank you so much for having this candid conversation with me, for being on the show, for all your vulnerabilities today. I certainly appreciate it. And we really hope this episode was helpful for especially people who are going through just the whole range of emotions right now, who are feeling triggered, and our hearts are certainly with you. So take care of yourself, and bye for now. Chat with you soon.
Thanks for tuning in to the Women Offshore podcast. What did you think of the show? Leave a rating and review in Apple Podcasts. Additionally, if you want to propel Women Offshore forward, please visit womenoffshore.org or womenoffshore.shop, make a donation, or purchase some swag. Until next time, stay safe out there, and I'll talk to you soon.